Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight we're on episode 252, and we are revisiting a topic we had done quite a while ago now, actually, in the past. But, I mean, quite a bit of time has passed, as I said, and there's a little bit of new technology out there, plus Ben has a new purchase. So we thought we'd come back to the topic of snowshoes. Plus, I mean, it is that time of year. We're finally getting a little bit of snow. I don't know about you folks over there, but here in eastern Canada, we've actually had enough snow that you could go out and snowshoe in the last couple weeks.
Oh, no, ours is mostly melted now. It's gone.
Oh, that's no good, Ben. Jeez, it was minus... No word of a lie, man. It was minus 16 before wind chill this morning. Here, no, with wind chill, it was like minus 28, minus 32, something like that. It was cold.
Driving home today from work, 7 degrees.
I don't like that.
I can always go up in elevation and find snow somewhere, I'm sure. But yeah, no, I mean, we wanted to talk about snowshoes, and in the past we talked about, you know, a lot, I concentrated a lot on the traditional style, and I do have a set of those, and everyone's seen the wooden ones. I don't have a set of those here, but this is the style that I have used in the past, and I love this style, don't get me wrong, they're great, but one of the things that I had a conversation with a little while ago is, you know, what if it's not so much snow, but like a little bit icy? Or what if it's a trail a lot of people have walked on and it's now, you know, more slippery than, you know, and you have a couple options in those. You could try to get away with spikes or micro spikes. But if you have a combination, the more modern snowshoes, they do have a traction device inside of them, and that allows you to grip. So yeah, we wanted to talk a little bit about it, and just, you know, it's a fun way to get out. I've always enjoyed snowshoeing. I think you have too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be honest. It's been probably 2 years since I've actually done any real amount of snowshoeing. I went for one little snowshoe last winter, but I mean, I probably didn't need the snowshoes, honestly. It's probably just to start with the snowshoes without them. Which, if anybody doesn't know, you need a certain depth of snow. Like, there is this kind of payoff reward system with snowshoes if you're not familiar with them. Because walking with snowshoes is inherently harder than walking without them if you're on plain open ground. However, if you're sinking up to your waist with every step, then it's less effort. So you gotta pitch that stuff. But anyway, yeah, last year I went out, I walked down to the waterfall during the winter there. And like I said, it was maybe mid shin deep, so really I don't know if the snowshoes were doing me any help or hindrance, to be honest with you. I think it was splitting hairs.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot to think about with snowshoes. One, if it's like the dry powder, you're not walking on top of that, you're sticking down either way, and that stuff tends to fall on top of your snowshoes and just makes it more heavy. If it's somewhat compactable, if it's a little bit sticky and it's relatively deep, it allows you to walk more or less on top of it. So you do need snow that's not super dry and not really fluffy to be able to do it. But in that condition, you can travel a long distance on top of the snow. And I've also seen it where you get up and you walk for a while and it's perfectly fine. And then all of a sudden, you know, you step too hard or something goes on and you drop. Like, I've dropped down to basically neck level in snow before. So, and that's where you get that like hard pack on top and a lot of fluff underneath it. And you're trying to stay on that hard pack without it ever letting go. And snowshoes will help with that too. Also walking across ice with snowshoes, spread your weight out and you're less likely to puncture through the ice. So that helps.
And I think last time we did this topic, and I'd have to look again because I didn't bring any of my snowshoes in, but I think last time I actually showed a pair of snowshoes that was specifically made for walking on ice. Instead of having like the big qual kind of attachments that we're probably going to be talking about here later tonight, the entire bottom off it has tiny little cleats. But they still spread yourself out. That way you don't get like the sharp points of the claws trying to dig in one specific spot, potentially on thinner ice, making it weaker. It spreads it out a lot like those rubber kind of cleats that you can buy from any of the big box marts that you just slap on your boots. But they still end up being about a foot wide each, so you do spread your weight out. Like, they're great for what they are. They suck for the snow, though.
So, I mean, what I kind of wanted to bring up, I guess, and we can talk a little bit this, is looking at them, I went for a hike with a buddy, and he said, you know, The snowshoes I have might not be the perfect for the hike. Unfortunately for me, the hike we ended up wanting to do and the hike we got to do were two different ones. The snow hill, the trail was too crowded. We couldn't even get close to it, so we ended up going to a different trail. And snowshoes weren't necessary for that trail, so we left them home. But in the meantime, I told my wife, "Could you pick me up a set?" So she went to Costco and she bought a set at Costco. And then I looked at them and I'm like, "You know, there's some aspects about these I really like, but there's some aspects I didn't." So I did a lot of research. We drove to a couple of outdoor stores and took a look at the ones they had, and I looked at ones on Amazon. And there was a few things that I thought were really important. And one is you can get snowshoes that have a blade all the way around, like you said. Now, one set of those you can get, I think it's the MSR style. And I watched a review of a guy up in northern BC. He was using those for hiking. And he said the problem with his is he actually collapsed the sides in on them because there wasn't enough lateral support on those. So I looked, and there is designs that have, they're made of angle iron, so they're like angled material, and they would be stiffer. But the MSR style that he had just has a couple of crossbars. And I think the average person doing the average walking would have years of enjoyment out of those without a problem. This guy was hiking through the woods and doing a lot of side loads on it. And of course, eventually managed to collapse a set. He actually collapsed two sets in his review. So he showed a few options. So, like you said, if you're doing a lot of ice, you are looking for one with more traction. Your more standard tubular framed ones with a like a plastic or nylon cross member instead of the webbing like on this do have a tendency to slide on ice and slide when you're going uphill.
I have an old set of Airquas, and they're the old traditional teardrop shape with the great big long tail on them, and that was the one thing I found about them is they were shoddy on ice.
So then you get your grips underneath, and you'll see there's two types of grips that are super common. Those are made of steel, and those are made of aluminum. And some shoes, like the set I have, actually have both. So the heel part is more steel, the front nose, the tail, or the toe part is of aluminum on mine. So
So what's the
is one.
point behind the two materials, Ben? Because I mean, I knew there was different materials. I thought it was just cost point. Is there actually some method to the madness behind these?
Well, if you look at the aluminum ones, they're often going to be thicker because to get the same strength, you need more material. But even that thicker material is probably a little bit lighter than the equivalent of steel, but you need to prevent them from bending and buckling and stuff. So probably a bit of weight savings, bit of a few other things. I personally think steel is going to hold up longer than aluminum. Aluminum is traditionally a softer metal, and so if you're walking across rocks and hard material, you'll wear the nibs down and they won't bite as good. That being said, honestly, if you're walking across a lot of hard material, you will wear both down. Don't be fooled to think that it won't. So one of the other things we've seen, and you mentioned it before, I'd never seen this before, but a lot of them have a piece that you can flip up near the heel. And I think you have a picture that we can
Do
share.
I actually have the Amazon webpage boosted up here, Ben? So you're probably not going to see it because I have you on Teams versus our broadcast here, but it is now clearly up with the picture of this little platform we're talking about. So just to intervene one second there, Ben, as you folks can see right under the heel on this picture that we're showing here, there's a little like piece of metal, I think is what you said it was, Ben. And it kind of flips out with a little arm that holds it up into position so that it gives you more of a flat foot when you were walking up inclines, I think is what you were talking about, wasn't it, Ben?
So if you're walking up a hill, and rather than having to really tilt your feet to keep your body straight, it allows your feet to stay in a more level position and helps you climb a little bit better. And I thought that was kind of neat. I did. I thought that was a neat concept. It showed up on a lot of more expensive shoes, and then there were some cheaper ones that I've seen. One set even had a steel platform that went on top of that, so the bar wasn't right under your heel. Most of them don't. They didn't go with that extra piece. But I thought that was kind of neat. I haven't truly tested it out, but I can really see the point of that.
And once again, just interjecting because you can't see here, Ben, I threw that picture back up again, folks. So if you're watching this on the video one, so the platform that Ben's talking about would be at the top of the picture. Just the plain bar is going to be at the bottom of the picture there. And as you can see, as the bar goes through and digs into the heel, I think, much to what you were saying there, Ben, this is probably going to add a lot of fatigue and uncomfortableness. It's going to be more comfortable than trying to walk on your tippy toes going up a hill. But for any extended period of time, this is probably going to create hot spots in your feet and cramping and stuff like that. Versus the top one there that has the platform, which kind of extends out, goes over the entirety of your heel, spreads that weight out. It's probably going to give, you know, reduce fatigue a little bit more and just give you that much more comfort. Sorry, Ben, go ahead. Pitcher's down now.
I think it's really going to matter too what kind of boots you have. If you have pretty stiff boots with a good heel, you won't notice it so much. If your boots are kind of softer, more moccasin-like, then you're going to feel that rod underneath your hands or your feet, and it's going to affect you. But yeah, I think what I really wanted to focus on is you really need to think about the terrain and or the weather conditions. One snowshoe does not fit all, and we talked about it. If you're on icy, slippery things, you're going to want more of those grips. So the round tubular ones that are very popular, you can get them almost anywhere. Those will be slippery, even with the grips in the middle. The ones I bought are much more like that because I do hope to, you know, be using them for the snow portion more than the ice portion. But they do have grips underneath them. And the other thing I found is they range anywhere from $60 a pair to like $500+.
Yeah, and snowshoes, believe it or not, it's something I have a significant number of. And much like yourself, Ben, I know you do. You guys have different kinds there as well. Somehow over my time, I've acquired, I was just counting them up today, I got 7 pair of snowshoes for just me. No idea why. I'm just rounding them up. I'm a snowshoe refugee camp. I have no idea. But anyway, I was looking at them, and they all have very similar things in common with them. And there are some differences. So one of the points that I want to make on this one that I don't think we talked about last episode was, how do you choose a pair of snowshoes for yourself? And we're already kind of leading into this, so I'm just going to tail end on yours. And one of the things, like you said, is the cleats and stuff on the bottom off them. Another big thing is going to be the actual size of the snowshoe, but we're going to talk about that once we finish the first thought. Just giving you a heads up where I want to lead with this.
I know, for sure. And I think there's add-ons that we can do to help with where you want to go too. But yeah, because if you think about it, everyone's heard of a snowshoe hare. The bigger the feet, the more snow you can, you know, the less likely you are to sink in the snow. You're trying to increase the cross-section area of your foot on the snow. You want to cover a bigger area. So, you know, this will spread my weight out of a much bigger area and hold me up on the snow much better. But there's some issues with this. This is wide. You can get snowshoes that aren't much wider than skis, and they're long. There's a couple I've seen like that. This is wider than the ones I have by probably 2 or 3 inches per side, which means that when you're walking, your legs are open a bit more, and that, or you're hitting your feet yourself. So you have to be conscious that this is going to change how you walk.
And that's a good point right there, Ben, just to touch on it for 1 second before we pass it and I lose my thought, is anybody that hasn't experienced snowshoeing yet, if you're wanting to get into it, or if you have tried snowshoeing just a little bit and you didn't like it, realize that it does, exactly as Ben said, change exactly how you walk. It's not something you can just throw on and run around all day, though many people do, don't get me wrong, it is possible. It's not effective. Let me go with that more specifically. You have to train yourself to walk a little bit. You actually walk differently, not only in stride and width, keeping your legs apart, but you tend to walk a lot shallower and more frequent. And that's going to be a little bit in breaking trail. That's going to be a little bit about trying to keep your footprints in an old footprint, so you're not constantly sinking down in a new footprint every time. And yeah, that sounds like a mouthful. It'll make total sense when you get walking around on snowshoes if you haven't yet. But yeah, don't just get discouraged if you throw a set on and you don't like them right away. It's like horseback riding, riding a bike, things like that. It's going to take a little bit of practice and experience to develop that skill and get a little bit more comfortable with it. I know me, the first time I throw a pair of snowshoes on at the start of every winter, I get kind of a version of saddle sore. It's not saddle sore because there's no saddle involved, but I feel it in my hips more so because I do have that, you know, wider stance and shorter gait, which just works muscles in places that you don't normally work muscles. Anyway, yeah, that's the only point I want to follow up on that before we passed it.
As you adjust your stuff, you're going to... And the other thing, and this is an important thing, and I think we can hit this before your next topic, is the bindings.
Mm.
You know, this is probably one of the most simple bindings I've ever found, and it's simply a rubber hole. You stick your toe in, and you pull this around the back. But here's the problem. It takes a fair bit of strength to pull this back over your heel, and if you're not used to it, and it's an awkward angle, that can be difficult. Once it goes on, it's very tight, but in getting it off even, you have to pop this underneath your heel and then pull your foot out. That can be awkward if you can't bend down.
Once again, just before we move on, Ben, I'm trying to interject my points where I can put them in. The other thing about that style there specifically, folks, and if you're listening to us audio, no video, basically it's just a big sheet of rubber with a hole in it. You put your toe down in through the hole, as Ben said, then you kind of pop the back just over your heel. If you let that come up towards your ankle, which I see a lot of people have done this before, it's going to add a significant amount of fatigue to you because that's too high up on your leg. So now you have to lift your leg so much higher to get that snowshoe up and stuff like that. Keep in mind, folks, that may be another reason you didn't have a good experience with snowshoes before. Make sure the bindings are on properly. Anyway, go ahead, Ben. Sorry.
And you want your foot placed in the right spot. There's a pivot point, and it should be near the ball of your feet. And if your foot's too far forward, you're kind of overstepping the shoe. And if it's too far back, you won't be able to properly move. And, yeah, because the tail of your shoe generally just drags in the snow. It doesn't stay attached. You're only covering the front. So just kind of be aware that this thing's floating underneath your feet. But other bindings use type of a... I'm going to best describe as a ratchet strap. The ones I have, you pull it through and you can keep pulling the lever and it'll keep tightening to a point where it basically says you can't tighten it anymore. That's a good system. There's a lot of ones. There's springy ones. There's strapping ones. I don't know if there's ones with a proper boot that just lock in like skis.
I imagine a high-end one, somebody out there has invented this thing. I don't own a set, that's for sure.
No.
Well, now you got me curious. You talk, I'm looking.
But what I'm going to say is take a look at the binding system. Is it what you want? Is it good? Is it secure? Does it work for you? Because if it doesn't work for you, if you find it difficult, if you find it confusing, then it's something that you're going to be less inclined to use and less inclined to take with you. Because it is an extra item. And then when you don't need it, it's awkward. What do you do with it? It's, you know... 28 to 40 inches long. It's
depending on the snowshoe you have, yeah.
6 to 12 inches wide or more, you know? So keep that in mind. The size of your shoe definitely matters. I'm wondering how wide those shoes are.
Yeah.
Those might actually be more than a foot.
Oh, gosh. I have a set that's probably less than a foot. But as you said, it ends up being a little longer. Now, the ones I use for myself, they're quite wide. They're like the ones you have. Plus, they get a long tail on them, which is kind of segueing into what I want to talk about picking the right snowshoes and length and stuff comes into it. So I guess I'll get to that in a minute. Let's finish up on your thought first. I want to try and keep us half-paced here instead of jumping around.
Oh, no, I think I've more or less covered it. Just... be aware of the binding system. As I look, the more expensive ones definitely have better bindings. As you see, your materials are going to change. I guess the other thing is, overall materials. Look for one that materials are look like they're going to really hold up. Because this has rope. It's a fisherman's twine rope. This takes a lot of weight and strength. And these last a long time. But if you're walking across rugged material, you'll cut through these ropes, and these are the weak points. And a lot of people I knew actually just wrapped an extra length of rope all the way around it to protect it. The newer ones are made of a very tough synthetic material, and it's more of a webbing. But yeah, take a look at those. You can get ones that are made of solid plastic. You can find ones that contain a lot more like aluminums and metals. And very little webbings. Take a look at what they are and if they meet your criteria. The other thing that's really difficult in snowshoes, but a good test when you're using it, can I walk backwards? And a lot of the snowshoes you will find that is very difficult. And I think you're come to this one.
My what does?
You were going to say something about that. I feel
Yeah,
it's.
so I guess how to collect my thoughts and where I want to go with this. So, to expand on walking backwards with yours, the overall length of the snowshoe is going to make a big difference on how effectively it is to walk backwards, which also comes into how you're selecting your snowshoes and the kind of terrain you're going to be walking in on them. As Ben said earlier, usually your heel's not clipped into this thing. It free floats as where the if this is your snowshoe, your foot kind of goes in it and it's always kind of pivoting like that as you walk across. So when you try to walk backwards, it's generally you have to lift your leg a lot higher and swing it out and back if you have a longer snowshoe. So why would you get a longer snowshoe? I hear all of you asking. Well, depending on your weight, overall weight, not just your physical weight, but the weight of you and all of your gear, you have to have so much surface area going down on that snow so you don't sink down through it. I'm not going to pretend to, to give a lesson in physics and all of this great stuff on that, but basically, think of it this way. Thin ice. Let's talk ice instead of snow. The thinner the ice, the more you want to spread your weight out. The heavier you are, the quicker you're going to go through thinner ice, unless you spread that weight out more and more and more. Same concept with snow. So you may want wider snowshoes if you plan to do a lot of multi-directional traveling because you don't have to pick them up quite as high to walk backwards. Or you may want a narrower, longer one, much like a ski, as Ben was talking about there before, give you the same surface area on the snow, but it's gonna, bring your hips in a little bit. It's gonna be a little bit more comfortable. But this is really for like breaking trail and walking in straight lines with shallow turns. You're not going to turn on a dime with these things. You know what I mean? So you kind of got to balance out what is going to give you enough surface area to be able to stay on top of the snow, plus give you enough comfort that you actually want to walk around on these things. And like I said, it's going to come down to where are you taking them. If you're going to be walking on open lakes, and I mean there's nothing around you for great distances, I'd say get longer and narrower. It's going to be a little nicer on your hips. And this is just a personal preference, folks. I'm not saying that's exactly what you should run out and buy. Absolutely do some research. But for me, I would get something that's a little narrower and longer. That's still going to give me the same amount of surface area. Now, what's long and narrow for me may not be long and narrow for you fine folks out there, because once again, it's going to depend on how much you weigh as an individual and how much gear you're taking. So me fully geared up, for winter, and that's going to include my hat, gloves, pants, multi-layers, coats, sweaters, a pack with all my gear and stuff on it. Guaranteed, I'm over 350 pounds. Somebody else carrying the same amount, smaller person, smaller stature, maybe they're only around 200 pounds. So they don't need as big of a snowshoe as where I'm going to need, basically two kid pools attached to my feet so I can walk across the snow. And that is kind of where I get laughed at a little bit, as I'm sure you would know, Ben, a little heavier dude. When I haul out my snowshoes when I'm going snowshoeing, everybody kind of goes, "Are you compensating for something?" And I'm like, "No, this is just what it requires to keep my fat ass out of the snow." You know what I mean?
No, I am compensating for something, my
My
weight.
weight. But yeah,
But
no.
no. Yeah, so snowshoes are generally rated like 100%. What you're saying is rated on weight. And so if you weigh 200 pounds, we'll use that as a round number. Me and you will never see 200 pounds again, most likely, my
Well,
friend.
maybe 5 years after I'm dead, but yeah.
But, yeah, if you weigh 200 pounds and you're planning carrying gear, then you want one that can carry you plus gear. And even then, that's a number for like a certain type of snow. Like we said, this even softer and fluffier stuff probably is still not going to help you. And stuff that are more dense, you'll be able to walk across quite well. Going with a smaller shoe is oftentimes a mistake.
And this is a big mistake I do see a lot of people make because they want one, smaller shoes are generally more cost effective. You know what I mean? Less material, generally they're going to be a little cheaper. And two, they want to save on that size so they're not walking weird and some weight. So all the right reasons for doing all the wrong things.
But one thing I did see is some of them, especially like the MSR, some of the more high-end brands, will actually sell you an add-on, a tail piece that you can put on the back to extend your weight.
Yeah.
So,
I haven't actually seen them in person, but I have seen them online.
I was looking at them in the store. It's pretty neat. They're designed for the particular shoes, so I think it was the MSR Ascent Lightning. I think I sent you a picture of the shoes, but not the tail. But
Yeah,
yeah, you can.
I see the MSR ones here. I just opened it up. I was looking at them.
See if I can.
Did you want me to bring this picture up for you, Ben, or are you going to talk about it a little?
You can just throw it up. There's a couple of things on there, but here's the tail. Sent you a picture of tail, buddy.
Okay. If we ever had a chance of getting monetized, it definitely went out the window. All right, let's see if I can get it up here. All right, so I'm opening the first picture here, the one with them leaning against the wall. I'll bring the tail up here in a second. I gotta.
So this is the one, actually the ones I described that the guy had complained they bent. And the thing is, it is pretty well a flat piece of steel, goes up and down, and it's wrapped all the way around, and everything is based off of that. The thing is, it won't take a side load very well, but it is really good for other means. It's definitely something that we can use to meet the needs. But that same shoe comes, you can pay an extra $75, and there's a 9-inch adds or 6 inches of tail to the back of them.
And I am just bringing that tail piece up now. All right, go for it. Well, I have to get rid of a stupid banner, but yeah, okay, you're
Anyways,
good.
yeah, for increased flotation, it'll give you a bit more. So if you buy a set of these shoes and you find that you're not quite getting the weight you want, this might help you out. It doesn't say how much it increases by. The Lightning, which I showed you, that's $105 for the add-on, actually. So there's different tails for different ones. Make sure you get the right one for your shoe. But just something else to think about, different options.
Just a quick comment here from Red Bear Tactical, who joins us fairly often. He's found a lot of great snowshoes at yard sales. It's summertime. And you know what? That's where I've gotten a lot of mine is out of season. Honestly, somebody will be cleaning out their garage and like, I got a pair of snowshoes. I'm never going to use them again. Do you want them? And I have that uncanny ability to not be able to say no to something like that. I'm like, yeah, I'll take them. I'll find somebody that needs them, if nothing else. And apparently, it's always me that needs them. But yeah, great place to find snowshoes is definitely during the summer at yard sales, flea markets, thrift stores. I found them in all locations like that. Good deals on them, too, because when it's hot and sunny, nobody thinks about the snow.
I found quite a few on Marketplace. The set I did buy, I bought brand new off of Amazon. I was fairly happy with them. The things I can say too is like with that one, I bought a set. It also came with a set of poles and gaiters, and I needed a new pair of gaiters, and it was a $10 coupon off. So honestly, the shoes didn't cost me that much. Things that I am going to suggest you look for in poles.
Well, you're getting the poll there, just saying hi to Matt joining us. Welcome to the show, Matt. Glad you could join us here tonight.
Trying to bring to the point, I'm missing a set of poles too. I got gear everywhere gone. This here is what I would consider a cheaper set of poles. And one of the things is that they're nice and smooth, but the lock is a twist mechanism. If you have a set of these, you probably know what I'm talking about. Half the time it won't lock, and you're twisting and twisting and twisting, and then it'll catch, and it's all great. And it can be pretty good, but sometimes they'll slip if they're not tight enough. This gets awkward over time, and it's not much you can do about it. They also tend to be given anti-shock devices, which I am 50-50 unsure of whether I like or not. It says it's a little less impact, but it means I'm not sure that I'm getting a solid grip. So now we've been buying new poles lately for things. The ones I tend to like now have this. It pops out, you can tighten it down, and then it locks down, and it helps add.
It's a way more stable walking device. That twist one you had, believe it or not, I had a set of those. First set of tracking poles I ever had. Didn't end up using them a whole lot because they never would hold up. So what did I do? Cut the bottoms off and put some wing nuts on them and used them as cone picker uppers for the motorcycle courses. They work great for that.
So, that being said, there's a few other things to look at. Make sure you're happy with the grip. They should have a rope. Make sure you're wearing it properly. Improperly, and I'm not going to tell you how because I probably am doing it wrong. But I think there's a tendency to do this. And I think this is the one they complain about because if you fall, you can break your wrist. It should be up there and it allow you to.
There is a method to it. I have seen it and I know exactly what you're talking about. And I highly encourage everybody, much as Ben did, do a little research on that. Don't listen to the two hillbillies. We get stuff wrong too.
But do some research. Make sure you're using them properly. The other thing you will find, and almost all of them have this, there's different bases you can get. This one here is meant for walking on like harder material and all that. You can take it off if you're really strong, like me. And there's a like carbide tip, and that's used for like on ice and stuff, and it'll work. And then you get the baskets. I think there's still a basket on this one, and you can get this size and then probably another size up depending on your shoes, and that's for on snow so it doesn't stink down. Very similar to your snowshoes.
And we've talked about trekking poles before in the past. Like, they're just a good thing to have. You don't necessarily need them just for snowshoes. Just for walking around trails and stuff. It acts like a whole other leg, honestly.
Well, and you probably won't find this option on your ski ones and your snowshoe ones. But this one comes off, and there's a piece there to put your camera on, and you can use it as a monopod. So, we have a bunch now, just because we've bought different items that need things. And so poles, like you said, very useful. A lot of tents and stuff can use them. And even if your tent doesn't use a pole for that, it's sometimes useful to have something like that for the guidelines. If you want the pullouts to be working better, putting them over a stick or tying them to a set of hiking poles means that it's coming out at a better angle. I went camping a little while ago, and that was one of the things I struggled with, finding a decent stick to raise my pullouts to be a bit better. So, you know, free hint that you didn't expect to get today. How to pick out a good set of poles. So if you're buying a set, make sure that the set you're buying has the features you want. Otherwise, you've bought a bunch of stuff that you don't need just to get one thing that you wanted. Make sure that everything in the set. And so I looked at a bunch of sets, and some of them had the locking mechanism I don't like. And I ended up buying the one I liked with the mechanisms I did want.
Yeah, and honestly, folks, if you're wondering, the twist locks, if you're looking for a cheap set to get you around, like we said, they'll do okay. They're not great. If you want a set that you're not going to replace, get those snap locks, guys. They really are the best ones. What was the old expression? Buy many times, cry many times, or buy once, cry once?
Yeah. I have to say, honestly, if you have a set like this that don't have the twist, you know, the better locking mechanism, and it's working out great for you, don't go buy another set. I'm not saying that these are absolutely horrible. They work, and there's a reason they sell them, because they do work, and many people are able to use them successfully. If you're having a trouble and you think, oh, these are stupid, think about it. It may be the locking system. It may be some of the functions in it that you're paying for that you don't necessarily need. But there's a lot to even poles. So when you're getting into these things, there's a lot to consider. Weight and how they're put together. Some of the most lightweight ones actually come in pieces, and they have like, they're made of carbon fiber, and they don't slide inside each other, so you can save a lot of weight. And so those are neat systems. But they may not be as adjustable.
Okay. It's not that I'm not paying attention. I'm trying to... Matt Wosley asks a question here. Do they make seal skin for the bottom of shoes? I'm trying to figure out what he means, but like, literally, do they make seal skin bottoms on snowshoes? I'm sure somebody somewhere has. I mean, I doubt they mass produce them. They'd probably have a PR nightmare on their hands. Or seal skin something I'm not picking up here. Matt, can you elaborate on that question just a little bit for me, buddy? I'd love to answer it for you. I just want to make sure I'm answering what I think I'm answering and not just off the cuff.
If anyone makes a sealskin shoe, though, it's in Newfoundland.
Oh, for sure. I mean, absolutely. That's exactly where I was thinking. It's probably going to be either like Newfoundland or maybe Nunavut. You know what I mean? Only two. If anywhere on the planet's going to have made seal skin snowshoes, that's going to be the two provinces or territory and province that's going to have done it, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember... Say buying it. We used a lot of seal skin products growing up, and I have a seal skin bookmark somewhere. yeah, hate me if you want, but, you know...
I have a pair of seal skin gloves, I'm not going to lie. Picked them up. Well, actually, I inherited them way back. I think my mother owned them originally, and they were made for, where did Dad pick those up for? It was up north. It was the Northwest Territories before, you know, Nunavut became a territory and all that stuff, somewhere up in that area. And it was made by the indigenous people there. And you want to talk about the warmest things I have ever had on my hands in the winter? I mean, they're getting old now, so they're kind of a conversation piece more than anything, but they were great.
Oh no, they are. You know, I've used snowshoe products. I mean, there's a reason for it. I mean, the fur is designed to be kind of waterproof and insulating, and it keeps the seal fine. I mean, it also has a layer of fat, but
and so keep in mind, I mean, where these gloves and products are made, a lot of times the people from those areas, they are hunting and living sustainably off these things. So it's just another harvest, and they're utilizing the entirety of the animal. So when you look at it that way, it's not really that bad of a thing. So yeah, Matt Wosley, yeah, I know my uncle has seal skin that pulls off his ski for skiing and trekking. Okay, that's a new one to me, Matt. Not going to lie, man. That's something I'm not 100% familiar with. About the skin added to the skis for... talking about the skin added to the skis for grip when you're trying to climb hills and stuff like that. So, you missed the first part of the stuff here, Matt. Now I know where we're on, what you're talking about. A lot of snowshoes you get now, they're going to have built-in traction on the bottom off them, either by kind of a qualish type system or little nubs, depending if you're going to be on more harder snow or softer snow. They do make attachable bottoms for snowshoes that have no kind of grip on the bottom. Ben had a set there. We showed them up earlier. They're just kind of like a ropey webbing. So there's no real grip attached to those. You can get literally, it's like a big piece of rubber with some bolt heads jammed in the bottom off, and it just kind of stretches over, snaps onto it, and it's going to give you a little bit of added grip on them if you're floating around on ice and stuff like that. And I shouldn't say floating, walking around on ice. Let's be more correct with what I'm saying.
But yeah, no, I think we've covered most of the topics we want, have we not?
Yeah. Honestly, this episode was just kind of an update episode, folks. There was a little bit new technology, that whole platform thing. It really impressed me, as well as Ben, I believe. And it was something that is definitely out there that I hadn't seen before, Ben hadn't seen before, maybe you folks did, and we're just behind the times. But I feel like it was probably one of those things that it's relatively, and I say with quotes, relatively new, that's just starting to make a little bit of a run now. And if it's something, like if you're in the market for a set of snowshoes, it's definitely a feature to look for, especially if you're in hillier terrain. Nova Scotia, like the whole place is just kind of up and down, you know what I mean? So it's definitely going to be something I look for in my next pair of snowshoes, which means now I got to sell off some snowshoes so I can buy a new set so I don't get thrown out in the doghouse.
But no, for sure. There was a lot of technology. I've seen some of them, when they put it through the membrane, actually, I think Faber, which is one of the companies I sent some pictures to you from, they have the long, thin ones. They have ones where they twist the material so each one acts like a little tooth.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's a lot of neat innovation out there. I think it's an area that has growth and has seen some changes. And some of this technology has been around for a while, and we've just been ignorant of it. But yeah, it's a piece of technology that's usable in the winter. It's not thought of a lot of the year, but snowshoes is definitely something that allows you to get out when you probably wouldn't otherwise. And it's something I used to really enjoy. If you're in the winter camping and you plan on doing some polk camping, and you're going to take a little sled and throw your gear in, snowshoes are going to allow you to get off the beaten trail and away from people and not have to worry about getting, you know, ran over by a snowmobile in the middle of the night.
Another thing on the snowshoes, folks, and this is kind of diving into the left field, but still snowshoe related, making yourself a pair of basic primitive snowshoes is a fun little project you can do out in the woods with very limited materials. Now, if you want to make a good set, you're getting into some more materials and a little bit more work. But just to make a basic primitive set out of some saplings or some real bendable wood, you lash the tail end together, you weave some through the middle where your foot's going to go on, and you attach a piece of rope or whatever to hold it on. It's a fun little project, and you can do it with kids and stuff like that too. And you'll experiment a lot, and you'll learn a lot about snowshoes and that method too, because I imagine everybody does it the first time. Their first set's either going to be way too big or way too small. You're either going to way overestimate it or way underestimate it. But once again, fun project, fun way to learn all about this stuff too, folks. So if you want to do something like that, there is tons of YouTube videos out there that'll teach you how to make a set of snowshoes. Or if you're really interested, I'm sure it's something Ben and I could do a quick video on as well. Maybe a short. I definitely want to try and get into doing some more YouTube shorts. That might be an idea for a YouTube short.
Yeah, the most basic I've ever seen was what we call the pot lids, and it was literally a piece of plywood cut in a circle.
Yep, and a piece of rope strapped through it.
Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, I think, though, like I said, I think we've really covered this topic. We've done a decent job of it. If this is something you're interested in, you know, do your own research, get out there and try things, but think about some of the stuff we're talking about. Try to pick up something that's good quality and within the budget you're looking for. You know, I don't think this is something you have to spend thousands of dollars on. I think you can get away in the $100 range or slightly more.
I was going to say, if you just want a basic set of snowshoes, and I rarely name big box stores, but Canadian Tire, for up here in Canada, this time of year, especially in the spring, you're going to see significant discounts come on some snowshoes. I seen $189 pair of snowshoes on for like $70 the other day, I think.
Nah.
Yeah, they had a bin of them in there in New Glasgow, so I'd have to go and check again. But down back, if anybody's in this area, I'm wondering, there was some super discounts on snowshoes there. I don't know if they're an old model, maybe getting replaced, or they just feel like they're starting to go out of season already when we're just starting to get snow, because, you know, why not? It's definitely worth looking into.
Well, they just may realize they have hundreds. Yeah, there's. I just quickly pulled up their site. Outbound. They have $100 shoes on for $70. The kit is $150. Woods, which is another company pretty well sold by them, $190 on for $170. I'm not seeing great sales.
No, this one might have been specific to here. It was just, it was in the clearance bin, you know what I mean? But I mean, yeah. Canadian Tire always has some sales on to some degree, as you've seen, Ben. They're not great sales, but they're not bad sales. And if you want to get into a cheap pair of snowshoes, it is a way to get you out there. The only warning is, with Woods and stuff like that, the house brands, don't expect the same quality you're going to get from like a pair of snowshoes you're going to buy from Mech. They're probably going to do okay. Don't get me wrong. Not bashing them. They are what they are for the price point you're paying.
But yeah, and if you're unsure, do a quick search on YouTube for the particular brand and see if you can get some feedback. Every set I've looked up, there's somebody had done a review of them and said, you know, this is what I found. This is what I didn't found. Look out for this. But, you know, for the most part, you can find a set that does what you want it to do.
Yep. And I think that's all I had to say tonight too. Like I said, it was just kind of a quick update video. Have a good night, folks. I don't get anything else.
Get out there, have fun. Remember to fill up your gas tank before your wife takes the vehicle.
Night, everybody. We'll see you next week.